The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. We're broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, to bring you all the best words about food, maybe even some food about words. I'm your host, Talia Ralph. And before we start today's delicious show, I just want to take 30 seconds to thank you all for being such wonderful and engaged listeners of the network. This week is the final week of our fundraising drive here at Heritage Radio, and we're lucky enough to have a generous sponsor who's actually offered to double all of our donations from this week. So we'd love to see you renew or start your membership with us today or this week only. It will go twice as far. So thank you guys so much for your support. And please do consider becoming a member or renewing your membership. And speaking of things that are better when doubled, today is an incredibly special day in the studio because we have not one, but two ice cream purveyors in the building with us. Just like a double scoop of ice cream, donations and guests are just the kind of thing that are usually better in twos. So both my inner child and outer food journalist is thrilled to welcome Brian Smith and Jackie Cuscuna, the husband and wife team behind the beloved Prospect Heights ice cream shop, Ample Hills Creamery, to the studio. Ample Hills has finally let the world in on the secrets of their addictive ice cream concoctions this summer with their new cookbook, Ample Hills Secrets and Stories from Brooklyn's Favorite Ice Cream Shop. So we're thrilled to have both of you here on Eat Your Words. I hope you guys don't mind that in my excitement, I've gone ahead and dubbed the episode The Ice Cream Party. But thank you so much for being here with us. So I guess
you.
We could start with the, you know, first things first, which is, what is it about ice cream, you think? It's one of those foods that people seem to be head over heels in love with in a way that, you know, people don't get like that about cake or brownies or, you know, maybe there's a handful of savory foods that people get sort of excited about, but ice cream is, you know, people are obsessed. What do you think it
now,
is about it?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I feel the same way personally about it. I mean, growing up, ice cream was the sort of first food love, you know, that I had. And I do think that it is sort of uniquely American and part of our mythology that we have this, you know, love and for ice cream, you know, and going to ice cream parlors. It's part of our cinematic history and old movies and soda fountains. And there is something somewhat mysterious about it. I think it's easier to make a cookie or a cupcake at home than it is to make ice cream at home, although it's not impossible. And so it becomes it's also a communal thing. People go to the ice cream parlor of old or when they're making ice cream at home with a hand crank. So it definitely has that that feel of it that's part of our myth and our popular culture.
And it's fun and playful, and you can do, like, really creative things with ice cream. It's not as scientific as baking a cake and timing it correctly. You can add things, you can take things away, and then add some more. So,
yeah. For sure, yeah. I think the point about nostalgia is really great, and you actually, both of you have great, you know, first ice cream memories that you share in the book. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of your first ice cream experience?
I grew up in South Florida, and we had a Swenson's that we used to go to. Swenson's, I think they're still out in California. There might be some. But the one that I went to in South Florida, I think, is long gone. But they used to have bubblegum ice cream, and that was my favorite thing, big pieces of bubblegum in it. And so it was definitely, it was one of the first flavors that we created when we opened the shop on Vanderbilt Avenue. It was to try to make an all-natural bubblegum ice cream from scratch. And so, you know, when we went and researched what bubblegum is, I mean, the flavor that we associate with what bubblegum is had to have come from somewhere. It didn't start as an artificial flavor. It had to originate somewhere. And so when I discovered that it's really a combination of fruit flavors, a lemon, an orange, and raspberry.
Cinnamon,
which is not fruit, but the lemon and the orange and the raspberry give you the sort of vague fruitiness that you can't identify. And then the cinnamon and then some vanilla give you this sort of minty back kick to it. And when you mix them together in the right proportions, it tastes like bubblegum, and you can use all natural or organic extracts. And so that was definitely, that was a flavor that we started with that we that was inspired by, you know, me going to Swenson's.
And it was our daughter's favorite flavor.
Right. Yeah. And you grew up in Queens.
Well, I grew up in New York and in Queens and Kew Gardens. And I grew up going to Eddie's Sweet Shop, which we still go to. And I took Brian there when we first started dating. And he was like, wow, this is so cool. They had come upstairs from the basement with this huge tub of whipped cream, like as a mound, a mountain. And as a kid, I remember sitting there with my grandmother. My grandmother's favorite flavor was strawberry. And we'd sit and have, we'd always get the fresh whipped cream on top. And it's something that, you know, I was able to include Brian in and then the rest of our family. And I always thought, I'd love to have a place like this, you know, near us in Brooklyn. And now we do. Now we have two.
And you guys started it. Yeah. So you also have this sort of wonderful story behind starting the shop. And I know that it was a huge leap of faith for you guys to sort of, especially you, Brian, sort of leave your career and leave the option of a really full-time job. And that security. Yeah. I'm wondering, obviously you look back on it as worth it, but I'm wondering what it felt like for you to sort of be like, yeah, no, I'm going to do the thing
right.
That
yeah.
is a fantasy.
It was definitely the hardest. I guess it was the hardest decision that I ever made, although in retrospect it's probably fairly easy because I just knew I would have been miserable in the alternative. But yeah, I mean, my background was doing radio, doing radio drama, producing and directing radio drama on public radio, and also for streaming, and then doing audio books and books on tape, and so and some screenwriting, some bad monster movies, that kind of thing. But it was difficult to sort of make that decision. You know, at the time, I had an offer to go be a full-time audiobook producer and run a book publisher's audiobook division. And that was the week that we were about to sign the lease on our first shop on Vanderbilt. And so it was this great moment of the angel and the devil sitting on your shoulder and wondering, you know, what do you do? And it was, you know, I figured for sure Jackie would be, you know, take the job. We've got two kids. And I was sort of shocked to sort of find out that she was more interested in me being, you know, not miserable, because I would have been miserable had I done that, and always wondered what if, you know. And so you know, bless her, but you so
yeah, what was that like for you, Jackie?
It really wasn't that hard, because I also knew that I was keeping my teaching job, you know, to keep the security for me there. And
health insurance.
And health insurance, exactly. And so to me, it was like, let's take the risk. Let's do it. Let's check it out. I mean, if it fails, it fails. But, you know, whatever, you know, stuff, you know, you never know. And so it wasn't as hard, I think, for me as it was for him. He projected a lot onto
yeah.
me.
Well, I had the weight of the decision, because it was my ice cream that I was making, and if people didn't like it or people didn't show up, it was on me. And here we were given this escape hatch, really, you know, to like, you know, to take the job and abandon the fantasy. It was a sure thing. or you take the thing that's by no means a sure thing and go for it, you know. I think you had more faith than I did in the ice cream.
Right, because I knew it was amazing. I knew it was really good, and, you know.
It's easier as the taster, right?
Yeah, exactly, when you're not the one creating it.
Yeah, it's funny how life will do that to you. Like, mm-hmm. when you have to make a decision, it'll just throw that other thing in there, and you're like, God, this was already hard enough.
Yeah.
Way to, you know, put that little canary, a little escape hatch. And are you now at the shop full time, Jackie? When did you are you still teaching?
I am still teaching. Yes, this summer I am at the shop full time. Come September, I will be back teaching. It's a very difficult task to, well, multitask in this way, I have to say. But at present, yes, I'm still a teacher.
For sure. Although I guess the schedule, I mean, summer's off, school's out, people want ice cream.
Exactly. Yep.
Cool. And can you guys tell the story behind the name? I love it. It's it's a beautiful name, and I actually never knew until I read the book, that came from.
Yes, it's not a pornography name.
As much as you get that a lot?
Yeah.
Well,
Jackie
was definitely suspect of the name when I sort of suggested it to her at first, thinking that people would, you know, not see through to the poetry of it.
Yeah.
It's from Whitman's Leaves of Grass, Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, specifically the poem, and I too lived Brooklyn of ample hills was mine. And the poem, it's a beautiful, that particular piece of that particular poem is all about these connections through time of people and places. Whitman is walking in Brooklyn. He's standing at the river's edge and seeing the seagulls, and he's seeing the clouds, and he's seeing the buildings, and he's talking to us 100 years, 150 years later, saying, you know, I'm looking at the same things you're looking at. And there's this sense of community and communal experience that really captured what we wanted to build out of an ice cream shop. It was almost more than ice cream. It was about creating that third place, you know, a place where people gathered to spend. There's a lot of good places to eat ice cream, but there's not that many good places to eat ice cream and also sort of pass the day. And so that was really important to us. And that line from that poem captured that. And also the beautiful sort of pastoral sense. You know, people think Ample Hills, they don't think Brooklyn, because Brooklyn is concrete. You know, it's buildings and brownstones. It's beautiful, but it's the hills have mostly been paved over, but they're used to be lots of hills covered in grasses, and there used to be lots of cows on those hills, and there used to be lots of dairy farms in Brooklyn. All of those are gone, so it was a nice way to sort of touch back on the history of Brooklyn, I think.
Mm-hmm. And do you guys, I mean, I know you're crazy because you're about to open your second location, mm-hmm. but do you find yourself sort of standing back and looking at the shop and feeling like, hey, we did make that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, sometimes it's just really overwhelming. And I think especially since we're in the process of opening up the new shop and just seeing how incredible it is and how much excitement is generated from the public and people just coming in and wanting to know when we're going to open. And it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I also love, I mean, you guys seem to pull inspiration from all over the place. I mean, from Whitman, and you have a background in monster movies, and I know some of your flavors are inspired by those sort of sci-fi stories and also the nostalgic flavors that you guys remember. What are some of your inspirations? Have you found any new ones? I mean, where do you sort of pull your ideas for?
Yeah, that's the joy in it, is trying to find new flavors and new ideas. Ice cream is such a great food for that kind of endless creativity, like soup. I mean, you can really do anything with it. There are only so many ways to cook a hamburger, but ice cream, literally, you can make anything out of ice cream. Not all of it would taste good, but it's so much fun to walk down the aisle of the grocery store and look for ideas for flavors. It's, you know, to go to the movies, to look for ideas for books. We get ideas from customers on our Facebook page. We're always doing that. Right now, we're in the middle of the summer movie season at Brooklyn Bridge Park. They do sci-fi movies with a view, outdoor movies. And, like, for example, this week on Thursday, they're showing a Sharknado sequel. And so we're designing a flavor to coincide with the premiere of that movie down at the waterfront. And so customers are coming up with ideas, and then we'll make it this week and sell it down there. So that kind of thing. For Gowanus, we're actually starting one that's sort of, based on some of my background in writing, bad monster movies. And so that's called It Came from Gowanus. And, old 50s movies, It Came from Outer Space, or It Came from Beneath the Sea. So we've designed a new flavor around the Gowanus Canal, and so that'll be exclusive to the shop. So, if I had to wake up every morning and just make vanilla and chocolate and strawberry, I think I would lose my mind. So it's to me it's the joy in trying to sort of always in search of that, great, perfect ice cream flavor. Sort of always being in search of it. If I ever find it, then I'll just retire. But I don't think that'll.
Well, you have to tell us what is in it. What came from Gowanus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. It came from Gowanus. That's going to be a salted chocolate fudge ice cream. So we made our sort of deepest, darkest, murkiest chocolate fudge ice cream with lots of Valrhona cocoa powder and dark chocolate pieces and melted in, and then a lot of sea salt. And then inside of that are all these different surprises. There's brownies with Grand Marnier in them, so there's sort of orange-scented brownies in that salted chocolate fudge ice cream. And then we also did a variation on our crack cookies from our salted crack caramel ice cream. So it's a butter sugar mix on a saltine cracker coated in chocolate is our normal crack cookie, and this one is instead there's a hazelnut paste or praline paste in the butter and sugar, and then we also coat them in gianduja, like a hazelnut chocolate, and then on top to represent the oysters that are going to be used as part of the cleanup in the Gowanus Canal, there's white chocolate pearls on it. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of different things going on there, which is what Gowanus feels like. It's sort of lots of surprises and things happening,
It's great. I like the pearls. That's a good touch. So we're actually going to take just a quick break, but don't worry, we'll be right back with more ice cream talk from Brian and Jackie of Ample Hills Creamery, who've written one of the coolest cookbooks of the summer, I think. So this is Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio. Keep your spoons at the ready. We'll be right back.
Herself in a mother's summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. She studied art in Spain.
Hey, I'm Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. Do you love us? Do you really? Do you count on us for real food news and content? Oh, we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means we depend on underwriting, grants, and the support of members like you to keep broadcasting. Help keep our voice alive. Visit heritageradionetwork.org and click the donate button today. We promise to never stop in our mission to create a world that's more sustainable, equitable, and delicious by expanding the way eaters think about food. Thanks for listening, and thanks for showing your support.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome back to Eat Your Words. This is your host, Talia Ralph, and we're broadcasting live from Roberta's. We're chatting with Brian and Jackie of Ample Hills Creamery, who have been out for a couple months now with their new cookbook, sharing all the secrets from their incredible ice cream shop and actually getting ready to open up a second location in Gowanus tomorrow. So, Brian, in the introduction to the book, we've been talking a little bit about movies and your movie background, and especially in the summer, sort of the great outdoor movies in Brooklyn. And you compare making ice cream to making a movie, and that both are sort of, require a certain amount of obsessiveness. I'm wondering if that comparison transfers to making a cookbook as well.
Yeah, it does. It was very strange to come back to writing, you know, having written monster movies for a few years, to go and leave that writing life behind, because writing I found so anxiety producing, and so the end of the day you don't really know whether you've written any good sentences, but at the end of the day I have a pretty good idea of whether I've made good ice cream, and so that made for a lot better sleep at night. And so to go back to writing after having left writing was actually gratifying, because it was a lot less stressful. First of all, I had Jackie was co-writing it, and then Lauren Kalin, our director of marketing, was illustrating it and also helping to write it. So it was not a solo effort. So that created a lot more help. And but it was definitely a lot of fun to try to think about how we could do a cookbook that wasn't just a whole series of recipes, which is what, you know, most cookbooks are a set of recipes. So we wanted to do something that had that captured the mood of the shop and the playfulness of the shop. So it's why, you know, we came up with a children's story that is interwoven throughout the cookbook with our mascots, our characters, and then a lot of children's activities that Jackie and Lauren worked on. So it was a real joint effort, and a lot more gratifying, honestly, than writing a TV movie that I don't have the control over at the end of the day, you know. But the cookbook was, you know, the thing that you see in your hands is what we envisioned it to be, which is not the same thing as a screenplay. You know?
I mean, we wanted to invite people into the book the way that we invite people into our shop, and for the book to be as interactive as possible, and for as many people who love ice cream as possible. So, which is why we have the story and the children's activities, and then the, you know, various little like sidebars about our staff, who are also a real, you know, big integral part of who we are as an ice cream shop. So that was one of the things we wanted to make sure.
And I'm wondering, what was it like writing the book together, but also, I mean, working together? I know that only happens in the summer, but if you guys can sort of comment on...
Most intense during the summer.
Right.
For various reasons. One is that, you know, obviously, like, we're swamped and it's crazy and we're busy. And so we're really, you know, working closely together. And I don't know, you want to add something to that?
No, the kids are out of school, so yeah, that adds another layer of anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, I mean, this summer in particular, just with opening the new shop tomorrow, it's been, you know, the undertaking, it's four times as large as the original shop. It's four times as many people, you know, involved in it. There's just 1,000 more decisions to be made. So it's definitely been a difficult and exciting time. But
yeah.
Right, and you guys have two young kids, right?
We do.
That must be, I mean, a kid's dream. But what is it like? I mean, do they inspire the flavors? And then conversely, how do you sort of keep them in check from going crazy and eating all the ice cream they want?
Because... Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, we had our daughter's 8th birthday party at the shop yesterday, actually, you know, 2 days pre-opening. So it was a little insane. And she definitely wanted to have her party at the shop. Like, she was very sure of it. And she knew what flavor she wanted, chocolate milk and cookies. So it's great in the one hand that they can kind of say, oh, my parents have an ice cream shop. And, you know, she really is kind of the most popular kid in her class because of it, which is nice. But then on the flip side of that, we have to limit the amount of ice cream. You know, she comes in the shop and they're both like, okay, ice cream, you know, and they're kind of crazed, and, you know, and they'll see their friends online, or they'll see their friends in the shop. And, well, so, you know, Sophia's getting ice cream pan. I have some. I'm like, well, you know, you just had a little, and we don't want to do this every single day. And you know, so that part is challenging. It seems great, but it can be difficult to limit their intake.
Hey, have you guys developed any like tactics or tricks? I mean, to give them like a spoonful every hour?
Yeah, no. No, we have nothing.
No, mostly they just eat it every day.
Yeah,
they
basically
just don't have it. They just don't have a lot, that's all.
Yeah,
which is more or less like, I mean, I used to eat a lot more ice cream than I eat now, because when I was writing the anxiety, I'd buy pints of Ben and Jerry's and eat the whole thing. Now I sort of eat ice cream all day long, but it's little bits and pieces. I don't sit down and get two scoops and hot fudge and whipped cream on it. So I think it's sort of like that with them too. So,
right, and do they help out? Do they help with?
They certainly would like to. Yeah, I mean we they help out sometimes.
Yeah, well, Nona likes to use that spray bottle and you know wipe things down. She was doing that yesterday a lot.
Yeah,
well, that's nice. Yeah. Two extra sets of little hands, right? So ice cream, I mean, it's pretty simple as recipes go. It's just, you know, mostly four ingredients, right? Milk, sugar, eggs, cream. But I'm wondering where it gets tricky and sort of you have advice for people who are taking on making ice cream at home, which always seemed really daunting to me, but you did it for a long time, Brian. Sort of where people trip up and maybe some easy pointers.
Well, the biggest challenge to making ice cream at home is to not make icy ice cream. I mean, it's one of those things that commercial ice cream is usually smoother and creamier than when you make ice cream at home. And the number one reason is not the quality of the ingredients. You can use better ingredients at home than you can get in most commercial ice cream, but it's the freezers. And so at home, your freezers only usually go down to 0 degrees, your home freezer. You know, when ice cream is made, they put it into a deep freezer, negative 20, negative 30 degrees. And the colder you can get the ice cream, the faster that you can get it that cold and freeze it, the fewer ice crystals grow, the less time they have to grow. And so that's the biggest challenge. So one of the things that we recommend is throwing out your entire refrigerator and freezer. No, you just having the best freezer you can, but also to use skim milk powder, which is basically dehydrated milk, and it's giving you more milk solids into your ice cream. And so you can buy that at any grocery store. Carnation makes it, Organic Valley, it has an organic version. And so what it's doing is the water, the natural water that's in milk or in cream, will combine with the powder and give you more milk solids and basically absorb some of that and make your finished product less icy. And the other thing is just what ice cream maker you're using. And so if you're using one of those gel insert ones, it's going to be difficult to get ice cream that's really smooth and creamy because they just don't get cold enough. Now, a little home ice cream maker that's got a compressor, that can get colder, or a hand-cranked one, which is really messy, but it's a lot more fun to do with rock salt and ice. The rock salt can drop the freezing temperature of the ice to colder than most home compressors can do. And so you can make your ice cream freeze up quicker, which again is fewer crystals and a creamier, smoother thing. You can always increase the number of egg yolks to make it more custardy. That also gives you more solids and less water per ounce of ice cream. And so that also will make it less icy. Those are some of the tricks that we do at home and in the shop.
And do you remember, I mean, you definitely have had successes with a lot of flavors, but one of my favorite little parts of the book is the pullout of failed flavors. Do you have any, you know, memories that stand out of like, oh my God, I totally messed up, either with the process or, you know, if you're not embarrassed to share some of the failed flavors?
Beer munchies. Talk
yes,
about the
beer munchies. Yeah, it seemed
Jackie's
good.
Making a face like,
but then Jackie doesn't like the salted crack either, so,
well,
you know, you can't.
Yeah.
The beer munchies was an apple lambic beer ice cream. And then we did a munchy version of like cheddar snaps and cheddar Cheetos and all those things sort of crumbled up and baked with butter and sugar and this. Because, you know, cheese and beer go together and apples and cheese and beer. But
and
it didn't
beer
really.
And cheese snacks
there might
go
still
together
be a good
so
flavor
well
there, but it didn't work. There's one person that keeps coming in occasionally because they did like it. So it was not without
one
its fans, but it definitely was. Not something we plan to make again.
It's really funny, but you had a carton of it, I guess.
A couple of tubs of it. We make tubs of it. You know, it's hard to make a little tiny batch anymore with a professional makers, so you sort of have to commit to at least making 3 or 6 gallons at a time.
Right. Yeah, caramelized Cheetos. I don't know.
Yeah.
That might be too much. Well, we're almost out of time, but I would love to hear a little bit about the new shop that you guys are opening tomorrow in Gowanus, sort of. What you have planned and
It's beautiful. I was up there last night for sunset, and it's just, we have a roof deck that has lights that are strewn across it, and really, it's just a magical place. There's an upstairs party room, there's a downstairs that's just beautiful, and the production is all right there. We're opening our doors tomorrow at noon, and it's going to be really, really sweet.
Great. Well, I am definitely curious about the It Came From Gowanus flavor. I'm sure some of our listeners are as well. So for people who want to come visit, what's the address? How do they get there?
It's 305 Nevin Street, which is at the corner of Union, just down from Dinosaur Barbecue and the new shuffleboard court there.
Right. Yes, the Royal Palms, right?
Yeah.
Great. So if anyone's interested in shuffleboard and ice cream, Ample Hills will have a second location as of tomorrow, and their new book is out in stores. So if you're curious about hand churning your own ice cream, or maybe trying out your own munchies or extreme flavors, definitely a lot of great tips in there. So we're looking forward to eating a lot of your ice cream this summer, and thank you so much to Brian Smith and Jackie Kuskuna of Ample Hills Creamery for being with us today. This has been another delicious episode of Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Talia Ralph.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.